Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan and Tim are here with me. And now Max joins us for the showbiz segment of the show that we do every Friday. And it's perfect that we have Tower of Power here because one of the big movies of the weekend and the thing we're going to lead off our reviews of the movies with today is called The Dark Tower, which is based on a series of Stephen King books that I have never read. How about you, Max?
I have not read the Dark Tower series. There are now 8 Dark Tower books, plus comic books and different adaptations and notations and what have you.
But we both went to the screening of this a few nights ago.
We did.
Which was packed.
Yes.
Every seat was filled in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to let you take the lead on this.
Can I talk a little bit about Stephen King?
Absolutely.
Okay, wonderful. So the first Stephen King book that I read was Christine. Mm-hmm. I wanted to read something that was adapted into a movie. So I watched Christine. I didn't really like the movie too much, but I thought, well, it wasn't too scary. I'll go ahead and try this book because I was kind of a big scaredy cat when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. Well, two things. Number one, the book is far more frightening than that movie, and it's a whole lot better. And it made me a lifelong fan of Stephen King. I found myself loving his writing and the characters, and through my teen years, I would read everything I could get my hands on, from the short story collections like Skeleton Crew and Night Shift to great books like Pet Sematary and The Shining and Carrie. But I never got around to Dark Tower. At the time, I think in the late 80s, early 90s, he'd only written 3 of them. And he was pretty cagey about, I don't know if I'll finish it. The thing to know about Stephen King is he's what's known as a discovery writer, which means when he gets an idea, he doesn't write an outline. He just says, you know, Ian and Dan walk into a bar. I wonder what happens next. And that's why his books can be so immediate and compelling, but also have really horrible endings, because most of them have really bad endings.
Because he hasn't plotted it out all the way to a conclusion?
He doesn't know how it's going to end. It's a surprise to him, too. Sometimes he sticks the landing, and they're really wonderful and kind of beautiful, like Duma Key. Other times, he just cannot do it at all. So in the late 80s, early 90s, I thought, well, Dark Tower, it's a fantasy story. It's going to be this long, sprawling thing. I'll go ahead and read the standalone books, and eventually I'll get to Dark Tower. And as I'm fond of saying, Stephen King himself, 86 my plan, because he never stopped writing books. He's written about 91 books, so I never got a chance.
What?
I believe there's about 91 books now.
That's an amazing number of books.
Since the late 70s. He is one of the most prolific prolific of all time. He also, after his car accident, which almost killed him, decided to finish Dark Tower, and I think they were at 3 books, and people thought, okay, good, he's gonna give us a final book, like the 4th Dark Tower book. No, he wrote 8, because that's how he, and these are long, giant books, too. They're not small. He also did something where he started connecting most of his standalone books, Cujo, stuff like that, to the Dark Tower mythos. So again, ruining my plan, because he said to me, hey, Foyzy, all the standalone books actually are a part of Dark Tower. So it's his magnum opus. He says it's the thing that he's most proud of.
I'm going to guess that Hollywood has wanted to make a movie out of this for a long time, but they couldn't figure out how.
It's too big. It's too sprawling. And so they came to him. Ron Howard actually came to him, being a lifelong fan of these books, too, and said, look, the only way to do this is to do it multimedia. We're going to have different web programs. We're going to do a television show like Game of Thrones. Then we'll do movies, too. It'll all interconnect. This is the way to do it, something new. And Stephen King said, how much money are you going to give me? And they went from there. Because King has always been sort of hands-off with his adaptations. He doesn't care if they're good or bad as long as he gets paid.
Right.
And some of the better ones, like The Shining, he hates because it's not even a good adaptation of his book, but it is an amazing motion picture. So I don't really think he cares how this movie comes across. But the fans of the Dark Tower series really do. I was sitting at the screening with a friend of mine who is a giant fan. And we can talk about our thoughts, being just movie critics and movie fans,
yep,
not having read the books.
Yep.
But I will let you know that she was devastated by this adaptation.
Well, it's funny that you're talking about how many books there are in the Dark Tower series, and somebody decided, let's actually make a movie based on this. And when I hear that, I usually think, well, that's going to be one of those epic movies that's over 2 hours long that I hate. No, this is 90 minutes. 90 minutes, and that was it.
Yes.
And so let's just lay out the basic plot line here.
Sure.
Idris Elba is the good guy. Mm-hmm. Matthew McConaughey is the bad guy.
And that's it.
It's
goodbye. Good. See you later. Thanks for coming.
It's good versus evil.
Yes.
I don't know about you, but I haven't seen many movies where they lay it out as good versus evil, and in the end, evil won. Now, I've seen movies where bad people won.
Mm-hmm.
The Godfather would be a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about good versus evil, where both sides were presented to you on the screen, and in the end, Evil turned out to be the winner at the closing credits.
Hmm.
So what do you think is going to happen in this movie? You think Idris Elba or Matthew McConaughey is going to win?
I have a question for you, Paul.
Yes.
What makes Idris Elba's gunslinger, Roland, a good guy?
That's a very good question. I suppose because he's trying to save... Oh, I don't know.
I think it's because the movie tells you he's good.
Well, that's right.
And that is lazy, lazy storytelling. I imagine if you read Dark Tower, they actually go into who Roland is, why he's a gunslinger, and why he's a good person that you would actually root for.
Okay.
And by contrast, the Man in Black... played by Matthew McConaughey, which
Johnny Cash,
in an offhanded line,
yeah, that's him.
They say,
based on his life story,
"Are you the devil?" And he says, "Oh, I'm worse than the devil." What does it even mean? What does it mean? You're worse than the devil?
I don't know.
So again, the movie's telling you who the characters are instead of showing you who they are.
I think it's important for me to say, not only have I never read the books, but having seen this movie, I know exactly the same amount about the books now as I did before I saw the movie. I knew nothing going in, and I know nothing coming out. I have no idea what this movie's about. There's a dark tower that controls the universe, and you can take it down by hitting it with laser beams that come out of the brains of children. Am I right?
I believe so.
Okay.
Well, it is a true story.
And the Man in Black, McConaughey, I thought he was some sort of like satanic figure, but apparently he works at like a call center for cell phones.
In a dystopian future, and you know how I feel about dystopias.
He has this weird computer center with tech agents who are like, "Well, we found a new portal." Who are you? Why are you working there? Do you get lunch breaks? Do you get health insurance?
Yeah.
I did not understand any of that at all.
You know, when I go to these screenings, sometimes I go to my car and I take out my phone and use the Notes app to leave myself notes about the movie, because sometimes it's a couple of days, sometimes it's a couple of weeks before we get to review it on the air, and I don't want to forget it. So here's what I wrote down. A tower that controls the universe, portals between places on Earth and other worlds, children screaming, special effects galore, dark mysterious people in locations, and a plot that is totally incomprehensible. That's my review of The Dark Tower.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I will say that I, like you, was happy that it wasn't a 3-hour long epic.
Oh.
But they it seems like from page one.
It seemed like it, by the way.
Page one on the adaptation, they got everything wrong. Because this is an 8-book series, and they've tried, I've talked to other people who've read these books. They've tried to incorporate elements from almost all 8 books in this 88 minutes. So that's why you have this very confused narrative. It also opens up on a little boy named Jake Chambers, and he's having nightmares. He's having dreams about a dark tower and a gunslinger, and everybody says, "You're crazy, Jake," and his parents think he's crazy, his school chums think he's crazy. We, the audience, know he's not crazy, but it also makes Jake the main character. That's strange, because you should be spending time with Roland, the gunslinger, getting to know him and why he's fighting against the Man in Black. Instead, most of the picture takes place on Earth, and that's weird for a movie based on a series of books in some uncharted other dimension.
Yeah. Well, you know how I feel about people who claim to have psychic abilities. That's all a con. And in this one, the little kid, Jake, has some sort of psychic ability.
Well, he's
ability.
Got the shining.
They call it the shine.
It's the shining from the books, you know, from the Stephen King book.
Okay.
They tried to put in...
I didn't get that. I didn't know that.
That's what they did.
It's just ludicrous.
They tried to... There's lots of Stephen King connections here. He sees an abandoned carnival that says Pennywise on it. That's a reference to It. He has the shine, like The Shining. There is a poster of Rita Hayworth at one point because of the Shawshank Redemption. One of the portals goes into 1408. That's a Stephen King short story. Being a King fan, I picked up on all this, but it's meaningless. It doesn't do anything with the story. Just seeing Christine the car drive by didn't make me enjoy this movie anymore. And the worst part about Dark Tower is, after the movie was over, unlike the great adaptations, you know, if you go see Godfather, you might pick up the book. If you go see the Harry Potter movies, you might pick up those books. People who saw Wonder Woman went into comic book shops and bought comics. Nobody who sees this is going to say, "You know, I should read these books." Now, being a Stephen King fan, I will, because I've wanted to anyway, and I'm not going to judge them by this horrible movie. But that's the worst thing, is when it was over, and I'm not going to spoil what happens, but it's a very neat and tidy ending.
Good beats evil.
Okay. But when it's
spoiler
over,
alert.
I didn't think, boy, I better rush out to Amazon.com or my local bookseller and buy The Dark Tower. And that's the worst part about this.
Let's talk about Ron Howard for just a second. He didn't direct this movie, but he's a producer of it. And I'm guessing that when Ron Howard is the producer, he probably takes the director aside a couple of times and says, I wouldn't do it that way. Here's what I would do. Don't you think?
Yeah, he's also in charge of this television series that he says is still going to happen. Okay. I don't think it will.
All right, let's talk about him for a second, because I have his IMDb page here, and I'm just looking back at the projects he's done as a producer in the last 10 years. I recently raved about the documentary he made about the Beatles called 8 Days a Week, The Touring Years. That's wonderful. But before that, he made Inferno, which is another one of those horrible Dan Brown movies. He did a TV series based on Curious George and one on Clan of the Cave Bear. He directed and produced a movie 2 years ago called In the Heart of the Sea, which was like a Moby Dick ripoff,
horrible.
Right?
It was horrible.
It was horrible. Let's go back a couple of years before that. He did something called The Good Lie, which I think had Reese Witherspoon in it. That did nothing and went nowhere. He did that car racing movie Rush 4 years ago. I didn't see it because people told me don't bother. Did you see it?
I did not.
He had one before that. There was another documentary. I'm looking back for anything that he's done in the last 10 years that has been really good on the big screen. He did The Dilemma with Vince Vaughn and Kevin James, where they pretend to be gay. So I don't even remember that one. Cowboys and Aliens with Daniel Craig and Harrison Ford.
That's a bad
that
movie.
Was absolutely horrible. And on and on, Angels and Demons was another one of the Dan Brown movies. It just, you go back 10 years, and this guy has done flop after flop after flop.
But
or just, sometimes they made money, but they were terrible movies.
But it won't matter, because next year, all of that gets erased because of a little franchise known as Star Wars.
Yeah, I know.
The biggest franchise of all time, and he stepped in when they fired the co-directors of the Han Solo spinoff movie. George Lucas called Ron Howard and said, you gotta help me out. We were a couple weeks away from closing production, and we had to fire these guys. Can you come in and help me out? And so Ron Howard said, fine.
But this is a guy whose career started off so well. I mean, forget about his TV stuff. You know, he did Splash. He did more recently Cinderella Man.
Backdraft
was terrific.
Apollo 13.
Apollo 13, one of the greatest movies about the space program ever. Parenthood was a really funny movie. Clean and Sober with Michael Keaton was an underrated movie. He was making really, really good movies there for a while. And then I think he thought of himself as an auteur, and so he could make the big movies like the Moby Dick movie. And at the same time, had to make the ultra commercial movies with Tom Hanks, and it just
those are all so bad.
Just turned out a terrible mixture for him. So I'm giving the Dark Tower a 2 on a scale of 10.
I will give the Dark Tower, based on the I'm guessing much better books by Stephen King, a 2 on a scale of 10.
Okay. Next movie we have to review for the I have two documentaries to review for you this week, and the next one we're going to talk about here is an Inconvenient Sequel. Now, if you know anything about the movie that it is the sequel to, An Inconvenient Truth, you know that was essentially Al Gore's slideshow on climate change, which won the Academy Award for Best Documentary in 2006.
Not the most exciting movie to watch.
It was not, but it was very informative. And now, 10 years later, Al Gore has gone back and made an Inconvenient Sequel subtitled Truth to Power.
Yes, I did that. I needed some more money.
That's from an interview that I did earlier with Al Gore. Now I know.
Wow, I can't believe you got Al Gore on the show.
I know half of the people who are listening can't stand Al Gore, and half of the people do like Al Gore. Put your politics aside for just a second, and let me just talk about the movie. There are scenes in this movie that will make even climate change deniers go, huh, I did not know that. For instance, he has scenes where he goes to Miami, and the streets of Miami, Florida, which are supposedly at sea level, turn out to be below sea level because the streets of Miami are flooded. And people who live in Miami and have lived there their entire lives say, this never happened before, where the ocean was actually on Ocean Boulevard. That's a little odd. And then he talks to some of the people there who are trying to do something about it, building more levees, etc. They're raising every building in Miami, Florida, a foot, because the water is 11 inches deep.
Well, that should do the trick, then. 1 foot.
Except that the prediction is that the storm surge is going to eventually get to 4 feet, which means those buildings they raised up, they did not raise them enough. He talks in the movie about how he was criticized for a scene in the first movie about animation that showed the 9/11 site, the memorial site, Ground Zero in New York, about in the animation they showed if there were a storm surge from a big storm moving through the New York area, the whole lower part of Manhattan would flood, including the 9/11 memorial site. And he says, I was criticized for that a lot when that movie came out in 2006. And then in 2012, Superstorm Sandy hit, and then he shows footage of the 9/11 memorial site being flooded by the storm surge from Superstorm Sandy. He has another great scene towards the end of the movie where he meets with a mayor of a town in Texas, a mayor who is a conservative Republican in a city that is the reddest city in the reddest county in Texas, the reddest state in the country. He says, there's no one around here who didn't vote for Donald Trump. But this mayor is a CPA, and he ran the numbers, and he figured out it's actually going to save us money if we have solar and wind making the electricity that powers our town instead of coal or natural gas or oil. And so that town is now 100% alternative energy.
Wow.
And they are saving tens of thousands of dollars a year. And there's a time when Al Gore is walking down the street with him, and they get to the headquarters of the local Republican Party. There's a sign hanging down outside the building. And the guy says to Al, can we get a picture? And you see Al look up at the sign and look down at him and goes, oh, what the hell? You're doing good things, and that's why I'm here. So he goes over and he puts his arm around him. And just as they're about to take the picture, he says, this is not an endorsement. And the mayor says, I didn't ask for one. I only asked for a picture. I mean, there's some of that stuff in there that's really human and really interesting. There are parts of this movie that show the 2015 Paris Climate Accords, the agreement that every country on Earth signed on to in 2015, which President Trump has since withdrawn us from. The only three countries that are not signatories to it now are the U.S., Syria, and Nicaragua. And Nicaragua isn't because they didn't think it went far enough. So we're kind of on that level with Syria now.
Good company.
But there are scenes with him at that thing in 2015 trying to convince the Prime Minister of India and his energy secretaries, ministers, as they call them there, to sign on. And they say, you know, if we were a country that was 150 years or 200 years old, like the United States, and we had an economy that could make it happen, we would probably do what you and some of these other countries in Western Europe are doing. We've only been a country since 1948. We're barely at the 70-year mark now. We don't have the wherewithal, and we don't have the money to make this happen. And so Al Gore says, okay, wait a second, I have an idea.
And wait a second, I have an idea.
Thank you. That's from the movie.
Brought the clip.
Yes. And he calls up the head of Solar City, which is an Elon Musk company, which has since been kind of merged into Tesla, but at the time was an independent company. He calls up not Elon Musk, but the guy who was the president of Solar City, and says, I'm going to ask you to do something that'll be very selfless on your part, but it'll help us all a lot. I would like you to give the patent rights to the use of Solar City's solar technology to the country of India, just to use in India, so they don't have to pay any royalties or any other fees, and they can get going on the right path here. And the guy from Solar City says, I'm going to have to get back to you on that. Like, really? You want me to give up an entire nation where we could sell our products? But he finally comes back to him, and it's almost like a tense moment about whether he's going to go along and whether they're going to make the deal and whether India is going to come on board. That sort of stuff is in the movie, and it's shot very well by the two people who directed this. I don't remember their names, Max. What are they?
That would be John Schenck and Bonnie Cohen.
The reason Max knows that is because he has booked those two people to be guests on Monday morning with John Grayson.
That's right. They'll be on The Inside with John Grayson and Jennifer Blum Monday morning at 10:20 in the morning, talking to the co-directors of An Inconvenient Sequel.
That's the shortest promo the station's aired in 2 years.
And did you guys see the other day, it was on the news, that they did a study of Al Gore's home in Nashville, and they said that he was using 21% more energy than anyone else in the country in that home.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That was on. That was yesterday.
Oh, was it? Yes.
It was either yesterday or Wednesday. Yeah,
funny they were talking about that and story would come out right before this movie.
Yeah. Came out. It's also funny that you talk about this town he was just in where they're 100% solar and wind and everything, and here he's got all this money and this big old mansion, and he's just chewing up coal and oil.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know anything about that story. I'm just trying to review the movie for you here, and I will tell you this. This movie is not going to change the mind of any climate change denier. Anybody who goes to this is going to be part of the choir that he is preaching to. It might urge a few more people to become environmental activists. That's what the last part of the movie is about. And you see throughout the movie, he's talking to people in these seminars about how you can help out with the climate change movement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of that. And frankly, that part of the movie bored me. I wanted to see more footage of things like rain bombs. Have you ever heard of rain bombs?
No.
I have not.
This thing looks like a nuclear explosion. And when I watched it on the screen, I realized this must be what happens to us when we get severe thunderstorms rolling through the St. Louis area.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially a giant black cloud that hovers over an area and drops all of its rain and just can cause devastation, but it just comes down as if you had turned on the water from a faucet and it all came out all at once. That's what these rain bombs are, and it's amazing to see the footage of it in this movie.
Wow. My grandma used to call those cloudbursts. We've had a cloudburst.
It's more than just a cloudburst.
Wow.
It's a tremendous amount of rain coming down on those. Gore says that that's because of what's happening to the climate. He also tries to explain the difference between climate and weather, but that's a whole other thing. But I wish there were more footage of things like that that showed us the actual effects of it. The scenes in Miami with the streets all being flooded, the rain bombs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That sort of stuff is much more impressive than having him go meet with some ministers from India and try to convince them to make some sort of deal. That's nothing more than politics as far as I'm concerned, and I didn't need any of that out of this movie. As a movie, it's well made. And as I said, he's preaching to the choir and won't change anybody's mind. But I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10. Not because I agree with most of what he's talking about in the movie. There are parts of it where I think he goes a little bit over the line. But I do think that it's an important topic that people need to get more information about and at least start discussions about.
So 7.5 out of 10.
7.5 out of 10 is my review.
Special request for Dan. Dan, I think you have a clip over there of Al Gore ordering a Big Mac and fries. Could you just play that really quick?
Oh, sure. Yes, I'd like to get a Big Mac and some French fries. I think it's the number one. I think you have some smog in your throat a little bit. I can't understand a damn thing you're saying.
Thank you, Dan.
Very, very good. Glad you captured that audio.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
I don't know where you got that clip.
Let's take a break. We'll come right back. One more documentary and, believe it or not, a Karate Kid sequel to tell you about after this. As we continue along with the showbiz stuff here on the Big 550 KTRS, Tim Weiland actually watched a movie.
Two movies, I think he said.
What? Now, I have to tell you, in all the years I've worked with Tim, he sits here while we talk about the movies and he goes, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't get that reference. I don't know what that is. I never saw that. I never saw that. I never saw that. I never go to movies. And this week, I'm guessing you didn't go
to the show. I didn't go to a movie, but I watched a movie.
Okay, what did you watch?
Well, the first movie I watched was a movie called The Devil's Double.
I never even heard of
it. It's about Uday Hussein, you know, Saddam Hussein's son,
yes.
and it was a guy that he picked to be his body double.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and it's a story about our ex-wife. My ex-wife and your ex-wife.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And it's based on a true story.
Yeah.
You know, the ending
Dan,
of it.
Dan, it's based on a true story.
Oh, yeah. So, and that was that's a really interesting movie. And I think that's kind of like an independent film that you don't really know the actors or actresses in it, but it's really good.
All right.
The other movie, you guys do all these reviews and that, I finally watched the movie Saving Private Ryan.
Finally?
Yeah.
You've never seen it before?
I have seen the opening. And that's where I got off.
You saw the first 25 minutes on the beach.
And that was it.
And that was all you had.
I've never seen any bit
of it. So what did you think of the rest of it?
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It's a pretty awesome and a pretty sad ending. But, I mean, that's how far behind I am of you guys.
Did you notice that I watched it not too terribly long ago, and I didn't really notice other stars in there. Paul Giamatti is in it.
Yes.
And then
Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel. Yep. I know Vin Diesel was
Ted Danson
shows up. Edward Burns is in there. Adam Goldberg.
Yeah, and it really didn't hit me until I watched it this last
Abe
time.
Abe Vigoda, like, Al Gore.
Yeah.
No, it's not amazing.
Al Gore is not in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, we're looking for Private Ryan. Has anybody seen him?
We'd like to save him.
Yeah. I just thought you guys get a kick out of that. I mean, it's how old is that?
It's good that you're trying to see more contemporary stuff.
Yeah. I think that's great. It is undervalued when people go back and watch older films. I think that's great. People are so concerned about what's new and what's coming out this weekend. Obviously, that's what we do on this segment. But, I mean, when I was working at Blockbuster Video, which used to be a thing, nobody would ever go to the middle of the store to rent anything that had come out even a couple of months ago.
They always walked around the outside. Yes. Side wall, which was all new releases.
It's all anybody wanted. It would crush me because I'd say, watch these older movies that are really good, and nobody wanted to.
I just saw Schindler's List for the first time.
Which is phenomenal.
They're awesome. Yeah. But I don't know that I could.
So you're a Spielberg guy.
Yeah, those are both Spielberg.
I do. I do like his stuff.
How about the Karate Kid?
I saw Karate Kid 1 and 2, the old ones.
There is going to be a new Karate Kid YouTube series.
YouTube series?
Yes. Ralph Macchio, mm-hmm. who played Daniel LaRusso in the original.
Daniel's son, thank you very much.
You're welcome. he and his on-screen rival, Johnny Lawrence, played by, I didn't know his name either, William Zabka, was the blonde guy who... Sweep the leg,
Johnny.
The half-hour comedy
Sweep the leg.
Got a straight-to-series order with 10 episodes. It's going to be called Cobra Kai.
It's a comedy?
Set 30 years after the original film, Johnny is down on his luck and reopens the Cobra Kai dojo on his search for redemption.
Okay.
This puts him at odds with Daniel, who, though successful, is trying to find balance in his life without Mr. Miyagi.
This needs to be a hardcore drama. This needs to be tugging at the heartstrings and lots of tears. I don't want to see Cobra Kai in a comedic sense.
So you're saying having it written by the guy who did Hot Tub Time Machine, not a good idea?
Maybe not.
That's who's doing it.
Maybe not.
Yeah. This is probably going to be on YouTube Red, which is YouTube's subscription channel.
Which has not taken off.
No, it has not. A lot of these subscription channels are not doing well. You know, they talked about, the cord cutters. They don't want cable. They don't want all that sort of stuff. And I said, and they're not going to pay $10 for every independent service you come up with.
Yeah, once you're spending $200, you might as well have cable at that point.
Right. So the Karate Kid Cobra Kai series is going to be out sometime next year.
I'll wait until it's on YouTube for free.
I don't even think I care.
I don't either.
No.
The other documentary to tell you about this week is called City of Ghosts. And if you don't like depressing stories, don't see this movie. This is, yes, Dan, based on a true story. It is a documentary about some journalists from Raqqa, Syria, who cover the ISIS takeover of their hometown and the attacks on Syrians by the forces of President Bashar al-Assad. They call their website, Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently, which trips right off the tongue, doesn't it?
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know how you say that in Arabic, but it better sound better than Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently, or as they call it in the captions on the screen, RBSS. The film focuses on three guys who are rather amazing guys, Muhammad, Hamoud, and Aziz, who work to get video of various atrocities online for the world to see. And by the way, there are some gruesome scenes in this movie. You see men, this is real people, being shot in the head at point blank range.
So they actually
use footage?
Yes. They don't use footage. This is actual footage that these people shot and then shared with the world. And so it got picked up by CNN and the BBC and news channels around the world. There are scenes of heads that have been chopped off bodies and put on the top of fence posts and that sort of stuff. Raqqa is an incredibly dangerous place to live and work.
Kind of like North St. Louis here.
Times a million.
Yeah.
The director, Matthew Heineman, got some amazing footage that he shot himself and also from these citizen journalists from RBSS. And it's an amazing story. The problem is that because what's going on in Raqqa, Syria, has no resolution, the movie has no resolution. It's all fluid, and it's all horrible. And as much as you might sympathize with them as they do their work, you're kind of left with nothing but remorse at the end. I haven't walked out of a movie so depressed. Now, I'm not talking about being upset that I wasted my time like I did with The Dark Tower. I'm talking about walking out of a movie theater and just being depressed.
It's interesting because when you talked about Inconvenient Sequel, the whole closing part of that film is saying, here's what you can do. Here's how you can get involved.
Yep.
Whereas the end of City of Ghosts, it sounds like it just says, yep, this is a bad situation. Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to donate money to them, I guess you can help them out that way. And they are continuing to tell the story. They have scenes of the ISIS leaders finding out that people are watching things in their homes and distributing things via internet through the satellite dishes that they have all over the town. So they made satellite dishes illegal. And you see scenes of young kids going up onto roofs and tearing these things down and just throwing them in. And you think to yourself, wow, what do those people do for any kind of fun now? Because walking outside, you could die. So you think, well, we'll just stay inside and we'll watch TV. Nope. No, you're not. You're not going to do that because that's how some of these pictures are getting out and getting in, and we can't have that. It is a seriously depressing movie. It's well made, and I give this guy credit for being there in the midst of it, and certainly those people who are doing the job, I give them a lot of credit, but I only give the movie a 6 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
So that's City of Ghosts. Have you been watching Ozark on Netflix, anybody?
Yes. I am about four or five episodes in.
Me too. For those of you who don't know, Ozark is a Netflix series about a family in Chicago headed by Jason Bateman and Laura Linney, who are both fantastic in this thing.
Yes, very good actor.
I've come to like Jason Bateman a lot in the last 10 years, and I've always thought Laura Linney was one of the most underrated actresses of her generation. Just fantastic in everything she does. Bateman's character is a money launderer for the Mexican cartel, drug cartels. And things happen in Chicago that force him to move to Lake of the Ozarks. And he's still working for the cartel, and now he's got to figure out how to launder, what is it?
$8 million.
$8 million.
In 3 months, I think.
Yeah, at Lake of the Ozarks. So he's got to find businesses that he can buy and then launder money through.
Senior Frogs.
That's close. Blue Cat Lodge. Very.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a strip club involved, which makes it uncomfortable for me to watch this series with my wife. Every time those scenes come on, I look over at her and she's rolling her eyes. Oh, here we go again.
Yes. The first strip club scene had the pregnant woman on stage. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes. Pregnant and topless.
Yes.
Whoa, Nelly.
Yeah, that's entertainment. You know, it was tough enough for me to watch the Bada Bing scenes with her from The Sopranos. but in this one, wow. So I'll
was
give you that
belly
warning.
Button an innie or an outie?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, at that point, it had to be an outie because it was such a big belly. She must have been 8 months pregnant.
Yes. She's very dancing. Pregnant.
Yeah. So there's that kind of seedy side of the Lake of the Ozarks. And I know that a lot of people who go there or live there are not happy that that is being shown on TV.
Yeah. How they're being portrayed as.
But then again, remember, this is a guy who launders money for a Mexican drug cartel. It's not a white-collar crime. This isn't Suits on USA. This is Ozark on Netflix. Are you going to keep watching?
Oh, absolutely, yes. It's very well done.
Me too. And then the other TV thing I want to mention, well, one more quick movie thing. Let's go to this movie thing about the Emoji Movie. I couldn't believe it was number one last weekend.
Hmm.
But here's a disgusting story from one of the screenings of the Emoji Movie.
No.
In Howell, New Jersey, a woman and her children were at the movie theater when the kids said to mom, "What's that man doing?" Now, when you're in a kid's movie and the children point to a man in the movie theater who's by himself and say, what's that man doing? It's not going to be good.
Was it the Pee Wee Herman?
Yes, it was.
At the Emoji movie?
Yes.
Not that the movie makes it better or worse, but that's just more confounding.
I'm guessing he didn't care what the film was on the screen.
Here's the thing. You can get anything you want to do that to on your screen at home.
I love the smiling face. I love the smiling face. I love the smiling face.
I think you like the open palm.
I also want to mention that SNL's Weekend Update Summer Edition is going to be back next Thursday night. If it's anything like the regular Weekend Update, it won't be funny at all. And ESPN is going to actually bring back the Ocho. From the movie Dodgeball on August 8th, which is 8-8, they're going to turn ESPNU into the Ocho.
That's funny.
And air things like the Disc Golf Championship, that's Frisbee, Roller Derby Championships, Trampoline Dodgeball, and the Championship of Bags, or as we here in the Midwest call it, Cornhole.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a whole day of that coming up on the Ocho on the Ocho of Ocho.
That'd be fun.
And that's your showbiz stuff for this week. Here on the Big 550 KTRS.